You're listening to the OneOfUs.net podcast network.
The year is 3129. Mankind is adrift in the stars. Giant spaceships hurtle the last of humanity towards their destiny, whatever it may be. Only one thing can keep them going and power these great ships, will feed the minds and spirits of these people. And that is the last brewing company to survive in the future, Circle Brewing. So great was their product that they indeed became the legendary Earth Brewers. But, you know, it's right now, 2018, or maybe 2019, depending on when you're listening to this. And you can get Circle Brewing right by going into Austin, by stopping into their brewery on Breaker Lane. Or you can get it in convenience stores where there's all sorts of good stuff. Martin, you're from the future. What do you think?
Well, I tell you, Austin is a city with no shortage of breweries, but this is some of the best I've ever had.
Well, there you go. You can't ask somebody who's going to give you a truer thing about beer than Mr. Martin Thomas, because he's an alcoholic. So we're talking about the movie, new movie, On the Basis of Gender. Oh, no, wait. I'm sorry. On the Basis of Sex.
Let's talk about sex.
How dare you? It's gender.
Well, no. They do make clear in the movie that would have been the better choice, the way to discuss this. This is the narrative drama version of the story of, I don't know, I'm sorry, goddess of like... of like making the world a better place, Ruth Bader Ginsburg.
Who can still rock the miniskirt. Sorry, is that sexist?
No, I mean, come on. I feel like this is kind of a mix, like cross review between this and RBG, the documentary about her life,
right.
Because that movie is in my top five of documentaries this year.
Yeah. RBG.
RBG.
RBG. RBG. Oh, sorry.
Yeah. The notorious that. RBG.
Notorious RBG. That's right, yeah.
And I really got this, like, I watched that first and I was like, God damn, I had no idea. I mean, I knew she was cool, but wow. I also didn't realize when she was young, how so hot she was.
She's your favorite superhero, yeah. Chris. Yeah.
Really? Cause I heard some people talking about like, Felicity Jones playing her. I was like, come on, Felicity Jones is Ruth Bader Ginsburg? I mean, I don't mean.
Well, she was sloppy seconds in the casting department. Well, Natalie Portman turned that role down first.
But you're still like people were going, come on, we all think of Ruth Bader Ginsburg as this, like, you know, shrunken midget.
As a tortoise.
Yeah, and the thing is, like, you watch the documentary, you're like, my God, when she was in her 20s and 30s, she was a knockout. Oh, my God. Not to talk any shit about elderly women.
I mean, let's be fair. I mean, it was the 50s. I think you still call her a hell of a dame.
Yeah.
Hell of a dame.
Hell of a dame.
She's a dame.
Felicity Jones does indeed play Ruth Bader Ginsburg in this film, directed by Mimi Leder. Is it Leder or Letter?
I always call her Leder.
Yeah. And this is... one of those biopics that is choosing specifically to focus on one particular aspect of this person's life, like more than not.
Yeah, for the most part, at least.
But first, I'm Chris.
I'm Frank.
I'm Ben.
Yeah, I have issues with this movie, and I at the same time, I'm like, how many of these issues come from me just having watched the documentary?
Well, I wish this movie was alive enough to have issues with, but it's just very to connect the dots by the numbers.
I didn't see the documentary, and overall, like, I had issues with this movie, but I also didn't at the same time, to the point where I think they give us comment cards, if you guys don't know, when we go see these screenings as press. My comment card is pretty much like, this movie's so well produced that it's overproduced, and it just feels clean. Like, it feels like... it feels like somebody took Ruth Bader Ginsburg and then basically put, like, you know, some cling film over it and then washed it.
At the same time, I'm like, this is a story I hope more people know about. Know what an incredible person this still alive person is.
Who's still making a difference.
Like, who's still making a difference. And there are really apologies. It's cedar fever time here.
Yeah, it is. Sorry about that.
We're all dying a little bit.
Yeah.
This version of the story does do real credit to some of the emotional arcs of this character. Like, certainly, like, it starts with her as a first-year student at Harvard Law School. She's already, at this point, married to her lifelong husband, Martin, until, sadly, he died well before she did, played here by Armie Hammer, who really does play him the way... I mean, I can see people going to see this who haven't watched the documentary going... He seems like a Mary Sue of male characters here.
But he also wasn't.
He really is like he really was in real life. This guy was like out of his time. Like, no, she's smarter than I am. She has more potential than I do. I support her entirely.
Don't you love? I think this is the only saving grace of the movie is the fact that this is in terms of its portrait of a marriage. This is a portrait of two people who really loved each other and wanted them to be the best versions of themselves that they could be.
It was a super strong marriage, which it actually was.
Yeah.
It deals with early on the fact that he had cancer. It went into remission. He survived it, but it was a big deal that really kind of like put a stopgap in their careers and tested them. And then her issues with, like, she was one of the few women that was accepted into Harvard Law School, where it was kind of a political move to do it, and no one ever expected it to turn into something more. No one running the school expected it to become, like, to turn out a Ruth Bader Ginsburg out of it.
Yeah, there's that line where she's at the dean's dinner for the women.
Sam Waterston.
Yeah, Sam Waterston, who feels exactly like what you'd expect Sam Waterston to be in the 1950s. And he's like, well, you know, we started this program 6 years ago. It's so great to have 9 of you women in the program. It's like, really? 6 years, you got to 9? Good job, Sam.
But she goes through all the problems you might expect at this period of time, where she, like, even though graduating at the very top of her class with top marks, and that's with having children, issues with cancer with her husband.
Helping him get through his own education.
Having to switch schools.
Yeah.
You know, at one point to, I think, Columbia. She's almost incapable of finding a law. She is incapable of finding a law position. No one wants to hire her. And she ends up taking a teaching position at Rutgers, starting off with like her focus, the law and sex discrimination, which at this point of time was very like hundreds and hundreds of cases where the courts of pre-existing cases, the courts ruled against sex discrimination cases and saying like, no, we don't like clearly we all have these predetermined ideas of the woman has this place in the household mm-hmm. and the man has this place in the household and never should the twain meet. So she gets brought by her husband a tax law case with a guy who hired a nurse to help him care for his aging mother so he could continue to work, who had dementia and what have you. And he was denied a tax deduction for nursing care because at the time the Internal Revenue Code specifically said a woman, a widower or divorce, or a husband whose wife is incapacitated or institutionalized.
Which is a hell of a wording for a law to begin with.
Yeah.
He had never been married. He did not qualify for the deduction. She saw it as an opportunity, like basically that dam breaking point to mm-hmm. go like, yes, I'm taking the case of a guy who's being discriminated against, but this is that point to open up a lot of legal questions after that. If we can win this case, then we have that, what's the term of it when a case is won and it's referred to
precedent.
In law? Precedent.
Yeah, that's the word.
thank you. To discuss the thousands of cases where it goes the other way.
It's a shrewd move, isn't it, on her part? And to see that sex discrimination wasn't so black and white. It wasn't easily defined. And I love that this movie just picks that case as sort of the landmark or, you know, the benchmark for the film.
But at the same time, I would have liked to have seen some of the later cases.
I would have too.
That's the bulk of the movie.
It's too expansive of a life story.
It's the linchpin, but the rest of it's the interesting part.
Yeah, it is. Yeah, absolutely.
It is an interesting situation, part of her life. It's not as interesting as the later parts.
No, not by any means.
Any stretch of the imagination. And the film really wants to sell this on the level of like, but this is why all of this is, everything that came later was important. But I'm like, but yeah, I think we all want to hear about those cases.
This is her origin story, essentially.
It's her origin story, but it never feels like it evolves to that next level. And there's a lot of really great actors appearing in this thing that I think do a terrific job, but have a screenplay that like has issues with wanting to regularly make the men in her life more responsible for the things that she ended up doing
than
they really were. Justin Theroux plays Mel Wolfe, who is the head of the, what is it, the
ACLU.
ACLU.
Yeah. And I love Justin Theroux, but they also, it's like, this guy's a douchebag, but he drives her to be strong. It's like, really?
Yeah, I mean,
that's Armie, a tough angle to go to.
Armie Hammer as well, who there is, once again, no question that he was a huge part of her life and supportive guy, but they overplay the hand so regularly in this thing of the degree to which they present her as like she's terrified and no anything else.
Does that just make you like kind of angry?
Nothing else I've seen. Yeah. Certainly not the documentary. They specifically say the otherwise. Like, no, there was no stopping her. There was no
point. It's like Lemmy Adam.
No point in which she went in front of the Supreme Court and stuttered.
Whereas this movie makes us like, she couldn't have done it without him, you know, egging her on and telling her to take this case and telling her this is how you should present in front of the judge. Like, look, she may not have been like a practicing lawyer at that time, but she knew how to present a point.
It's like, such an odd decision for a film about a feminist icon to make it like, yeah, but you gotta face it. It was largely because of the men in her life. That is like, you can't miss.
And one woman who's wasted by Kathy Bates.
And Kathy Bates, who we love, she's a goddess, but she's barely used here as Dorothy Kenyon, who is a previous lawyer, powerful lawyer, who had fought for issues like this, but largely is kind of like, this is never going to work.
She's jaded now. Yeah.
I do have to say, though, I mean, even what we're saying about the men in the movie, I just say, I really think this is one of my favorite Armie Hammer performances recently.
Oh, it's so beautifully subtle, isn't it?
Yeah.
He brings a lot to the character where he's just like, you are a good guy and a good husband. You also are a good lawyer, and you want to be the best human being you can be, just like she does. And, like, you kind of get that from him. It's like, because even when she calls him out on his bullshit, you're like, yes, it's not like he's being a douchebag. It's just he's falling into an easy trap that people fall into, and she points it out, and he even tries to adjust for that. It's like, you're being Armie Hammer, you're kind of what I wanted to picture Martin Ginsburg as, except for when the script tells you to be just more heavy-handed.
But I do like that, but at the same time, like I said, him and Justin Theroux in this film both fall into those traps that we talked about in our review of Welcome to Marwen, where it's that Hollywood dramatization insistence to create some, like, a struggle there for the character that didn't actually happen in real life and really goes counterintuitive to telling the story it's supposed to be telling. You know, I found myself kind of angry at points watching those scenes where I'm just like, that's not what happened. There's no story of her having trouble speaking in front of the court. She was
a fucking firebrand. Exactly.
Like, oh, she never could have pulled it off. It wasn't for the men in her life. And I was like, that's not what happened.
Those were the scenes where the other flaws is like the overproduced and cleanliness of the movie or just felt too tight. Like, that in general, you can kind of let that go, but then when you're just like, this doesn't feel true to the human being you're trying to represent or to the character. It's just like, I got so pulled out of it in some of those scenes where I'm like, can I check the time? Like, how much more do I have to sit through them doing this before we get to the parts of her actually, you know, standing for the court and making, you know, the cases that we know are crucial.
Now, all that being said, I think Felicity Jones is great in this role.
Yeah, she genuinely is.
She's charming and beautiful and and even though she seems to be wearing a mouthpiece.
She kind of does.
Yeah, she's beautiful. And
use camera tricks to make her look like she's short.
She's
standing next to Armie Hammer.
Yeah, Armie Hammer's tall as fuck.
Is he that tall?
Yeah, he's super tall. Yeah. If you look at pictures of her and her actual husband, there's a disparity.
Okay. I did not know that. Yeah. There you go.
As a guy who has a very short wife, I totally understand.
Do you believe that? That's the most honest part of the film, though.
Yeah, well, it's called Sit and Spin, baby. Sorry, that's horrible. I'm talking about a feminist film, and I'm like, let's talk about some dirty sex stuff.
Why not?
I'm sorry, I'm a monster. I know. I've acknowledged my part in the world.
You wouldn't have given her a job either. No, just kidding.
And I completely... No, you're damn right. I would have, like, said, like, hey, the job is all yours. How do I get you to pay for me just being a film critic on the side? Great job, honey. I'm all behind you 100%. I'm just going to watch movies. This is getting a little too real. Armie Hammer is so wonderful and charming and lovable in this role. And that's the thing, is that it's exactly what he should be. It's just those points in the third act where he kind of feels like the script is turning him into more like, I'm the reason why you get to be here.
I didn't really get that. I saw them more as I saw him more as like her ultimate champion and cheerleader throughout, more, you know, as opposed to Leo.
Well, yeah, it's more I feel like it's more specific with Justin Theroux's character than it is with him, but even so. Like, yeah. It's still a little bit of, like...
Well, I think the difference between the two of them is protection. He has this level of protection toward her, that he doesn't want her to, you know, fall on her face. He doesn't want anyone to attack her or tear her apart, and, you know, because it's just her first time. It is essentially, like, her going, you know, in front of the firing squad.
Yeah.
And he can't... He doesn't want her to, you know...
They really get the love between them, but that's the problem with all too many biopics. Someone in Hollywood's like, this should be more of a love story. And I'm like, really? Because I want a firebrand story. I want a story that, like, really goes into, that makes me angry in a way the movie should make me angry watching it. And that's not what we get.
I like that the guy they get as the young prosecutor, the young hot prosecutor trying to go up against her.
Oh, Jack Rayner, yeah.
Yeah, Jack Rayner, who I'm like... Do they make this guy intentionally look like his name should be Chet? Like, the most duper, like, that, women should be like, in the kitchen guy.
Slick hair back. Yes, he looks Southern like, accent.
He looks like, as I said, looks like he should be a Chet, like, in an 80s movie. It's like, oh, I'm going to go ski down the mountain and beat you so that I win the woman's heart. She has no say in it. I'm just going to win a ski championship. She has to be with me now.
I do definitely have mixed feelings about this, but I think it's great that it exists. I think it's amazing that we have a narrative film about Ruth Bader Ginsburg, who is one of the most amazing human beings of the 20th century.
Yeah.
I mean, come on. As much as I have mixed feelings about this, and I do think there's a lot of style in this film, I like a lot of the music in this film. There's a sequence at the very end where the real Ruth Bader Ginsburg showed up, and I just started pouring out tears.
Me too. Yeah.
I exploded with tears.
I did too.
Because I'm just like, you're a goddess. You know, you're amazing. The shit that you did to change the world, to change America towards the positive for rights for, I'm sorry, everyone.
Yeah.
Like, you're not based on gender discrimination.
There were applause in my theater when she showed up.
Yeah,
oh, was there?
They were nice.
So yeah, well, I mean, mind you, there was like clubs of literally like women of UT law.
And sure. Oh, you actually saw us with an audience. We saw us, like, a few of us.
Yeah. You guys went to the critic screening. I went to the mixed screening.
But let's go to final thoughts. Frank, get us started.
You know, I said this to the two of you. This movie is so, like, you know, if you just put a Christmas tree in, like, any one scene that would have been ripe for Hallmark, it is so just connect the dots. It is so, like, it's very, like, you know, base and sort of pedestrian in its approach, and it tries to hammer home points that don't, you know, deserve that as much hammering home. It does exist. Its strength, it really is in the portrait of a marriage and how, you know, these two people really, especially him, wanted the best for her, wanted her to reach her potential and was with her every step of the way, no matter how bumpy the road was. It really does disappoint me that this is coming from Mimi Leder, who directed one of my, not my favorite films of all time, but a really good film, Deep Impact, which is a beloved classic, and she really got,
I feel like I like that movie more because of how much I don't like Armageddon. The same year.
Well, that movie was better reviewed because it actually took time to do the research into some of the science, but also because it was more of a human interest story. And
she also did the very underrated The Peacemaker, which is a very early
Peacemaker. That was a good film, too.
I will agree. It's definitely underrated on that one.
But this, this film sadly doesn't do enough justice to Ruth Bader Ginsburg. I do like the case that they sort of show spotlight in this film and how it really does show that sex discrimination does have different, more than one definition. But she, ultimately the problem is that the latter part of her life is much more exciting than how she started out. It's a shame because everyone does a good job in this film. Kathy Bates only has two scenes and she knocks them out of the park. Felicity Jones, this is not an easy role to take on, and she does take it on and takes it on very well. I'm glad she did it. I'm glad that Armie Hammer, you know, can step away from being Armie Hammer and just, you know, be what most people consider to be a walker in this film. It's solid, but it's also unspectacular. And because of that, I got to give this 6.5. Actually, I'm going to give it 7 because of that. that cameo tagged on at the end, which really does.
It's so moving.
It really is moving, yeah. I'm going to give 7 out of 10 Ruth Bader Ginsburg walking up the steps of the Supreme Court in a short skirt and still rocking it.
A Ben.
Yeah, I mean, honestly, Felicity Jones is one of those actresses who I think recently has kind of done a really good job of just melting into some of her roles. Like, I think of her, like, between this and, like, Jyn Erso. It's like, I really didn't picture her as that same person throughout this movie. And, you know, those are two pretty high, you know, high-end roles for her to be in. And it's like, that's great. As I've said earlier, Armie Hammer, I think this is one of his better roles where I think he gets to play a little bit of a subdued character. He doesn't get to play that, you know, super handsome, larger-than-life person. He's a human being, and I think he does a great job with it. It's nice to see Sam Waterston in another film. You know, he's such a TV guy these days. Stephen Root's always nice, even though he's such a small part of this movie. It's just, it's a really solid cast here. And Justin Theroux, I've even grown to like so much. But I really can't say anything other than, like, I like the cast and I like the subject. As I said earlier, it really feels just so over-polished. It's like squeaky clean where they had the force in the bits where she's unsure about herself, which is not who Ruth Bader Ginsburg is. So the only conflict they could force in, real conflict to the character, is stuff that doesn't exist. Like, no, there's got to be some other stuff. Like, you know, they could have done more of the stuff with their daughter, which almost felt natural compared to the other things. Yeah. We didn't even touch on that because everything else just kind of stood out more as more of an issue. That's actually, it felt kind of real that her daughter would be more radicalized and, you know, that'd be kind of something
that's her as an influence to go through there with Kaylee Spaney playing that role there.
Yeah, I mean, you know, points it was a little bit jarring, but then they bring it back. Like, there's a great scene with Armie Hammer with their daughter. It's like, that's what a dad should be in a movie. Like, absolutely. This is great. Overall, though, I mean, yeah, especially if you're having a hard time finding the Notorious RBG to go see. Sure, go see this. I mean, it's...
I think it's just RBG.
Is it RBG? I thought it was Notorious RBG.
I think it's just RBG.
Whatever. I think it's maybe the poster then. It's a fine movie. It's a great movie. Honestly, it's just... You know, it's not going to be one of those great movies where you're like, you remember it a few years down the line. It's just like, if you want to see something uplifting and nice, and it's not a Hallmark movie, it's a little bit better than that, go see this. I give it 7 out of 10... I'm just going to go with...
I know, hard one to pass.
Women actually led into the Harvard Law Program.
Nice. Yeah, I mean, this is a very Hollywood biopic. It's led by extremely strong performances and the benefit of, like the director, Mimi Leader, going, okay, ultimately this is a love story, and I get that, but I feel like ultimately it... Like, that should have been a part of it, but that shouldn't have been the main part of it. And that's the movie she wanted to make, though, is that ultimately being a love story. And it is. It's charming. It's nice. It's just, it's really hurt by the facts of the Ruth Bader Ginsburg story, quite frankly.
Do you think it was bad timing after coming after the documentary?
I mean, I do, kind of. I think it felt like it would have been helped by waiting a couple years. But... and yes, by all means, if I had to recommend between this and RBG, which the documentary, which I think is a 10 out of 10 documentary, I love that film. I think it's so good. This is the lesser thing to see. But it's going to be inspirational to younger people. And I think it's like they've made a pop film that moves quickly from thing to thing. It's very accessible. I don't have an issue with it on that level at all. All I can do is discuss it critically and say that I think this is like a 7 out of 10 steps to the Supreme Court. It should be better than it is. It isn't. But let's not throw it under the bus completely.
No, you know, because it will inspire the right people.
Yeah. And we need more people inspired by this type of story.
Yeah.
Like I said, Ruth Bader Ginsburg, she's the Wonder Woman of our age, and we need to acknowledge that.